Scripture reading is from Ephesians 5, 25 through 29. Ephesians 5, 25 through 29. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she may be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ has done the church.
Everybody awake? We could have preached on the giving of the law and the thundering upon the mount, but that would have worked. I want to thank Corey for the excellent job in reading, and very encouraged to see our young men and all of our men participate and be used, and very encouraging. I am struggling a little bit with my voice tonight. It looked like for a while I might lose my voice. I tell this joke often that, you know, if I lose my voice sometimes in my household, it's 2 days before anybody notices. Okay. Twilight Zone time tonight. Okay, here we go. I have the PA to go down when I'm struggling with my voice. Okay. Any ideas here? I'm going to show you. One more time. I'm going to come back up with it. Okay. Okay, how about now? Shut this down through here. We'll go on with it. We'll have to get some little tech help there. Okay, let's get the level here okay. Everybody can hear me? Because I need my amplification tonight. All right. This evening I want to talk with you about a very fundamental truth and a very fundamental thing that each of us must learn. And that is in dealing with other people, and particularly as we make the decision to marry. I know that we have a large number of young people here, and I know that you sincerely, you want to go to heaven, and you want to marry someone to help you go to heaven. I want to talk a little bit about that in that process. I do believe that the home, in many ways, within the church is in trouble. Things that I've seen in my own lifetime has been very disturbing over marriages that did not make it. On the other hand, for those that are able to marry someone and they maintain their faith and they grow, marriage is one of the greatest blessings you can have and experience in this life. The problem we are having right now is that our culture has contributed what I call a quick fix mentality. And, you know, you see it in the movies, you know. Here's what you do. You go through the whirlwind romance. And then if you can just get married, get to the marriage ceremony, and everyone lives happily ever after. Now, that's fairy tale. I believe marriage is ordained by God, and it's a wonderful blessing. But it's just not finding the right person and having the perfect romance and somehow then getting them to make the wedding vows that somehow that in itself is going to make it. No, 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 no. You know, in this world, the world pictures, you getting things, you getting praises, accomplishing goals, you know. But you know, when you got the worldly approach toward things, it's easy come, easy go. If I get emotional and I have this infatuation and we rush in to get married, but if it didn't work out, maybe that wasn't just the right person. That's not God's thinking. The world teaches this kind of quick fix, self-centered approach, but that's not from God. In 1 John chapter 2, Jesus talked about the worldliness. He says, do not love the world or the things in the world. And later he talks about the world emphasizes the flesh, emphasizes the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. If you want marriage to work, you need to go to the author, and that is God. Jesus talked about the one who rules this world, John 14:30, speaking of Satan. He says, I will no longer talk much with you, for the ruler of this world is coming, and he has nothing in me. If you want to have a good marriage, you got to know God. You got to become to be like God. You've got to think like God. And you will receive blessings in this life and in life to come. But in order to enter into the marriage relationship, you're going to have to learn how to be unselfish. Because that's the nature of worldliness. Satan would love you to have a bad marriage. He would love you to enter into a relationship unprepared and following his will, because his will always is going to create problems. Worldliness looks at the short view and not at the long view. A humorous illustration, and I'm sure it's fictitious. There was a couple getting ready to celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary, and they had been miserable. And so the woman in her, quote, spirituality had this solution, how they're going to fix their marriage. It says, we've been miserable for 50 years. We've fought every day. We've disagreed on nearly everything. And I'm convinced that we can't keep going like this. So here's her solution. I made a commitment to pray that God will help us solve this problem. I'm praying that he will take one of us home. And when he answers my prayer, I'm going to live with my sister in Grand Rapids. You know, and so, you know, there is, you know, a lot of folks, you know, they just kind of, you know, want the easy way out. But I want to tell you something about the easy way out. Is that if you do not learn how to trust God and how to be selfless in this world, you're going to find bitterness and torment in the next. One thing I know about my God, he knows us. He knows us. And he wants to give us abundant life. In John 10:10, it says, the thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life, and they may have it more abundantly. When it comes to relationships, many of us can be very stubborn. We can think that we've learned it from what we've learned in our home, and that's the way we're going to do it. And you may have learned good things from your home, but you may not as well. You need to understand that it's going to take a commitment to God and an honesty that will test you to the core when you enter in to marriage. And really, I remember when I first put this sermon together several years ago, I used to regularly give wedding videos to couples. I would video the wedding and would give them to couples. I've actually got, you know, I've noticed Brad smiled. I found one of the old DVDs of his wedding that I've got in my office, but I used to do that for couples. But there were times when I was videoing a wedding, I was pretty shocked at some of the attitudes that I saw with some. I remember one couple, and they both should have been Christians, and during the prayer, when the preacher was praying for their future, they were laughing, talking to each other, and I'm thinking, oh my. What a lack of preparation they have going into that situation. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to preach this lesson, the difference between preparing for a wedding and a marriage. Another humorous illustration, a preacher was visiting a fourth grade Sunday school class to talk about marriage, and he asked the class, what does God say about marriage? And one four-year-old raised his hand and quickly answered, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. No. Well, no, that's not the right verse. But anyway, in marriage, you're seen for your real character. In marriage, if you have the love of God, you will see change occur year by year, and it'll keep getting better. And that's the thing that we want to emphasize. You see, Satan has wisdom. God has wisdom. Satan's wisdom in James 3:14 is described, but if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your heart, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. God, Satan would love you to have a tough marriage. He'd love you to divorce. He'd love you to marry. He'd love you to divorce again. He'd love you to raise children in that kind of atmosphere. The wisdom of Satan, they control the airwaves. They control the movies. There's a different wisdom. In verse 17, it says, "For the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy." You've got to make a choice, and it comes in your spirituality. There is nothing more important, and you're considering a mate, and you considering yourself to make yourself a good mate, is your love for God. Because these things that we read here do not come natural. I'm talking about the things that God gives. What Satan gives comes natural. And you're going to have to fight for it. First point I want to make this evening is that we should not rush into marriage. I'm not telling you when to get married. I'm not telling you in regards to the judgments that you have to make. But let's talk about what judgments we need to look at. You know, I've seen some people, how can I put it? They want to rush into marriage because they don't have confidence in their relationship. Have you ever seen people like that? You know, I'm afraid I'm going to lose with a person if I don't get married. We need to get them to the altar so I got them caught. Well, you know, when I look at the love of God and I look at the confidence that is produced by the love of God, I don't see that kind of fear. Here we're talking about Paul's confidence in Timothy doing what is right and showing the love of God, but I think this kind of confidence has got to be in your relationship, and you need to know it's there before you marry. Here Paul writing about Timothy says, "For I have no one like-minded who will sincerely care for your state. For all seek their own, not the things which are of Christ Jesus, but you know his proven character, that as a son with his father he served me in the gospel. Therefore, I hope to send him at once, as soon as I know how it goes with me." Here we see a man, Timothy, was a man who was motivated by the love of God. He says, you've been around Timothy. He's going to care about you. He's going to provide what is best for you. He's not self-centered. That is the kind of faith and that is the kind of mate you need to be and you need to pursue. And if you don't have that, wait. Give it some time. Develop that character before you jump into marriage. And so again, you know, I many times will tell people, I said, "Now, do you love this person?" "Yeah." "Well, if you love this person, then, and you got real love, guess what your love's going to be like a month from now, 6 months from now, a year from now? It's going to be stronger." But what if you don't have that kind of love? You know how you find out? Time is not your enemy. True love is described as the commitment of God reflected by his love in your life. 1 John 3:16, it says, "By this we know we love, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren." Notice again describing love, and it's the love of God. It's the agape love. It's not the emotional, romantic love that makes a marriage. It is the act of the will. It is an act of the will that is motivated by the grace and goodness of God, where you're going to serve regardless if it feels good. You're going to give your mate what they need, not what they deserve. Just as God gave us what we needed, not what we deserved. In 1 John 4:7, the Bible says, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. In this, the love of God was manifest toward us, that God has sent his only begotten Son into the world, that we might live through him. In this is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought to love one another." The thing that's going to make it your marriage last is going to be this commitment. You love God and you're committed to do good. You're willing to give up your rights. You're willing to sacrifice. You want to go to heaven. You want your mate to go to heaven. That is the kind of relationship you want to develop. And you don't have to fear that. Somebody's not going to cheat you and lie about you and run out on you when you got that kind of relationship. Yvette and I had a little statement, the little word that we made up when we were dating. And we were very much committed to this. I didn't get married till I was over 30, till I turned 30. But Yvette and I, while we were dating, we had this little thing called J-A-M-O-T, Jamot, which means just a matter of time. And we had this philosophy. We're not going to rush into anything. And if we need to take more time concerning our relationship, we'll take more time. Time is not our enemy. I want to recommend that to you. Another thing to consider as you're considering when to marry is you need to be prepared for the obligations of marriage. I was listening this morning on some musical station, and they were talking about marriage. And one of the great problems in marriage is when people enter into it and are not financially prepared. The husband's not prepared to provide for the home. Notice in Genesis 2, 23 and 24, here when you enter into this relationship, your relationship changes. And Adam said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." Two become one. It's not easy. You go from being single to being married. Things change. Things change greatly. And it's a wonderful change. But you got to be prepared for it. I'm running across more and more situations within the church that worry me, where the husband doesn't have the better education, the wife has the better job, and the husband stays at home and lets the wife work. That's unhealthy. I'm not saying a wife can't work. But I am saying that God's arrangement is that the man be the primary breadwinner. He can't let his parents be the breadwinner. He's got to be the breadwinner. In Ephesians 4:28, it says, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give to him who has need." And so you need to seriously consider this before you enter into marriage. Can you provide for this home? That is a great source of conflict. If you're not prepared, eventually that I'll preach called Marriage is for Two. And one of the things about two living, I'll never forget my brother. When I was single, I enjoyed going and running races. And I would go to different parts of the state. I remember I went up to Florence area and ran a race one time. And my brother told me out of the blue, he goes, "Well, you know, when you get married, you just can't go do something like that." And I was thinking to myself, I'm not married, and so I don't need that advice right now, you know. I'm still single. But he was right. Is that when you do get married, you can't be like a single person. "Well, hey, I'm going to go do this. Hey, I'm going to spend my money here." No, you're now thinking for two. You do that with your decisions. You do that with your time. You do that with your spending. You do that with your interest. You know, another argument I'm hearing brethren make, and I'm not sure if they're thinking this through, but I'm hearing some brethren misapply passages. And they're saying that, well, you know, if you've got strong sexual attraction for your mate, and that is strong, you need just to go ahead and get married now. No. Somebody would quote this verse. Look at what the verse is saying. And understand how you consider this in terms of the priorities of other things that God has said. In 1 Corinthians 7:8, it says, "But I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them to remain even as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion." Now, what this verse is talking about is whether or not you're going to decide to remain single throughout your life. You can make that decision, and if you can do that spiritually, you'll be in a stronger position. Paul talks about it in 1 Corinthians 7.
My mother was diagnosed with MS.
But most of us can't make that decision. That's not the path we're going to go down. And therefore, we marry. But stay in there. Because we fulfill the God-given desires in God's way. Here this verse is just saying this is the decision you make. But there are other things to consider as far as the timing of the marriage. You know, it's, you know, I've seen some people try to use this verse. They're saying, well, if you lust after somebody, then you can marry. It doesn't matter if they're eligible to marry. It doesn't matter how many times they've been divorced from marriage. Because you have eyes better in the burn. No, you're not looking at the context correctly. There are many things outside of biology that's going to determine when we marry. We need to consider the priorities of God, as we suggested earlier. Now let's talk about the husband, and let's talk about the wife, and then we'll draw a conclusion. You know, as you're entering into marriage, you need to understand what you're going to be doing. I presume many of you studying here, be in college and trying to pursue a degree that you're studying in order to get a job in some field. And it is true, it's interesting, when you study in college, there's a lot of things that can prepare you for the job, but it's not like getting the job. Sometimes I'll joke with people about marriage. It says marriage is kind of like getting a telephone call at 3 a.m. in the morning. You first get the ring, and then you wake up. And getting a new job is sometimes like that too, where you prepare in college, but they can't fully prepare you for the job. But there is a mental process of preparation. God wants you to be prepared. What does it mean to be a husband? Ephesians 5:25. Husbands, love your wife just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he may sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hates his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it just as the Lord does the church. I want to read to you from a wedding ceremony that sometimes I'll use when I marry couples as a preacher. Listen to this as I talk to the husband. As I quote Ephesians 5:25, I make this point. As a man, God has endowed you with strength. But never forget that true strength comes by keeping your heart tender before God. In keeping with this, you must know that God has placed you at the head of the marriage relationship. Now, that does not mean that you are the king and your wife is to be your slave. But rather, your headship is to be like Jesus's. Unselfishly put her desires and needs ahead of your own. Make decisions to strengthen the two of you spiritually. Always love your wife and tell her with your words and show her by your actions. Be the leader that God envisions you can be, and you will earn and enjoy your wife's everlasting love and respect. You know, as you begin to understand a lot of the needs and responsibilities of the husband, one of the primary things you need to understand is that you're going to be learning and trying to understand your wife for the rest of your life. And it's interesting, you know, that's not a burden. God made us differently. Because we're different is why she's a helpmeet for you. She can meet areas that you can't. She can see things that you can't. But men, we tend to be goal-oriented. We're driven by our work. And we can stop communicating with our mate if we're not careful. The Bible warns men along these lines, husbands. In 1 Peter 3:7, husbands likewise dwell with them, that is the wives, with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. I still have a lot to learn. And you know, and my wife has a lot to learn about me. We're different. But some of the things I've learned, and there's a lot more to learn, one of the things that I never quite understood at first in our marriage is that my wife had the desire sometimes just to talk about her day. I mean, just to talk about it. Now, as a guy, we talk about things and do something. We talk about things and solve something. Go out and work. Go out and fight. We normally just don't talk, just to talk and share our emotions of the day. That's not how I'm generally put together. Now, some things, maybe I do that with sports fans on some things and things like that. But one of the things I needed to learn is that was an act of love for her to want to talk to me that way. She wanted me to share her emotions and share her day. And if I don't take time to listen, and you know, one of the mistakes I made early is if Ed would start talking, we would joke about it's like drinking from a fire hose. You know, everything comes at one time, and I'd start getting sleepy, then I'd hold my eyelids like that, and you know, that discouraged her. But I had to remind myself, though, that she needs this. We're sharing. And, buddy, I'll tell you, I remember what it's like being single and not sharing you had anybody else care about you. And here, for whatever reason, I feel like I shot the moon, so to speak, when she agreed to marry me. And I feel unworthy. I do not feel like I deserve to be her husband in the sense of the woman that I married. And here she wants to share her thoughts with me. But that's not something that comes natural. That's one of those things I've had to learn. And many times I can forget that. But you see, when you seek to have understanding, it shows care. How many of you men have ever been in a job where your boss didn't care what you thought? Where your feedback meant nothing? You're not very happy when you're in that situation. Suppose you had to work and live with this person 24 hours a day and they didn't care what you thought at all. It's not a very pleasant situation. One of the things that, men, you need to understand, what your wives have done in marrying you, they put themselves at risk by marrying you. She's become very vulnerable in this act. She depends on you as the breadwinner. We've already talked about that. From the very beginning, Genesis 3:19, in the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for dust you are, from dust you shall return. You're going to have to show initiative. You need to provide. But it's well in the house, that's my problem. I'm the head of the house. I'm not to go run from it and go hide and go hope it gets solved. I need to go in there as the leader and try to see what I can do. She depends on me for her emotional needs. Years ago, Ann Landers had an article. I had one of this advice column, and they were talking about meeting sexual needs versus meeting other kinds of needs. And it was quite interesting, the response that she got, the question that was raised: would you be content to be held close and treated tenderly and forget about the act? And so she asked for the response, and she got 100,000 responses. And 72% of the respondents says yes, they would choose to be content to be held close and treated tenderly and forget the sex act. Now, in the home, in the marriage, that you have the fulfillment of your sexual desires. It's designed by God, and that shouldn't be ignored. But as time goes on, your needs change in those areas. But there's one area in terms of what you need that is always there. You need the wife needs to know that you love her and that you're tender to her. And a lot of husbands don't. Within the scope of God's will, you are to respect your husband, to believe in him, and to submit to his judgment. Now, when differences come in your marriage, as they inevitably will do and will, you have a right to advise your husband, and within limits, to try to persuade him of your way of thinking. But never forget that God has placed him in the leadership role. And again, as I suggest to you, a godly man is going to be easy to follow, but what if he marries somebody that's not godly? You've made a choice. And you cannot violate God's will, and you cannot go against God's will, and that will be the time that you take a stand. But there are going to be other decisions because you've made that marriage that you still follow, because he is the head. Let's talk about respect. We read this verse just a moment ago, but one of the things that women do not always realize is how us men are put together. We like to accomplish and achieve. We like to feel like we're goal-centered and we accomplish things. And praise and respect is critical in our work. I tell Yvette many times there are things I mess up with, and she knows. And I told her, I said, you know what, if I do something right and you tell me I've done it right, I'm going to want to do it again. You know, it's encouraging sometimes to receive praise and have somebody look up to you. And I realize how far short I fall compared to what I ought to be. But there's something very encouraging and motivating to me When I have the respect of my mate, and it's really important, young women, when you're entering the marriage, be careful with your tongues. Be careful with it. You can create some problems in that relationship. Disrespect to your husband can create problems much more quickly than you ever would imagine. And sometimes you don't have to overtly attack your husband. You can just give a little sarcasm and do other things, and you need to be careful there. You see, because men, once we start perceiving we are not respected, tell you one of the things we tend to do is we tend to withdraw. You know, if we're, this is not a pleasant situation, we can go be busy somewhere else. And so you need to be wise in this area. What does your husband hear and see when he comes in from work? There was another illustration here about a newlywed couple and the man being a little arrogant, a little foolish, and talking about his newlywed. He says, "Now that you're married, dear, I hope you don't mind if I mention a few little defects that I've noticed about you." Of course, she was witty. Her reply was, "This is not at all." The bride replied with a deceptive sweetness, "It was those defects that kept me from getting a better husband." You know, while that's funny, that's probably not the kind of conversation you want to have, okay? You know, one thing's for sure, that your mate's going to know your shortcomings. They will know them. They will know them, and, you know, again, you try to help each other. But a disrespectful wife really hurts. And if you're a Christian, you got to overcome that fearfulness that leads you to lash out. You want to convert them to the Lord. In 1 Peter 3:1, it says, "Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives, while they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear." Then later on, he talks about, you know, the kind of spirit that you have. You got to be willing to yield to the judgment of your mate. You submit to your own husbands. And that submission is not that you can't communicate, not that you can't talk, but there is a submission involved. And again, if you have the right kind of relationship, you know, I know that in our relationship, generally what we do is by consensus. It's rare that we go a different direction because we're both Christians. We both love God. We both understand the critical, important things, and the things that aren't as important, we're willing to give and take on that. And we've already suggested there's a limit to the submission. You cannot go against the will of God. Okay. You don't want to nag to death. You don't want to badger. And here's one of the problems we face in the church. I'll go back to husbands. We have too many cowards in the church. I've seen husbands that they just, you know, things go bad and they go and quit and they go and hide. The culture teaches that. We're seeing a demeaning of men and the role of men in this culture unlike anything in the history of our country. And it's affected the church and it's affected the home. You have situations in so many communities where we have a generation of people being raised without fathers. The neighborhood that I grew up in now has a 93% illegitimacy rate. And that's brought on by the government. It's brought on by a lot of other things. And you see it in the culture. You see it in movies and so on. You know, you talk about a man being a man. And I'm not saying these are godly people, but you think of the John Wayne types. And you think of the other types that you would see in older days in the movies of people that took things on and showed bravery and moved ahead and were leaders. You don't see a lot of that in the modern day media. Men are pictured as fools. And anyway, that's another lesson for another time. But you want to have a man, and you can help build your man by your praise and by your submission. And that's the very essence of submission. It's described in 1 Peter 3:5. "For in this manner in former times the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror." I remember hearing Sewell Hall make a point years ago, never thought about. But you know how Abraham came to the promised land? He left the big city. Ur was a big city. And he goes to the promised land and he lives in tents. And what's Sarah doing? She's just going along. And I can imagine one time there in one of these tents, it's a cold night and they got sheep out there, and "Abraham, do you think we could go somewhere else?" Do you think there might be a better place? You know, he was suggesting, he's not saying that Sarah ever said that, but he was talking about her submissiveness. She was following a man of God. And both Sarah and Abraham were great, but notice they had each other. The woman has a great influence on the atmosphere of the home. You know, the old poor folks restaurant many years ago used to go to, and there was a saying on the wall, if mama ain't happy, nobody's happy. And that's quite true in the home. The woman will set the tone for the home. And it's really important that you love God, that you're thankful, that you rejoice. So many things you can do will make a difference. You know, one of the things that sometimes I see, though, within the church is that sometimes women are weak on Bible study. Now, I'll tell you one thing I'm seeing right here in this congregation and the efforts we're making in our Bible classes. I'll tell you one thing. We're seeing some women that are really taking initiative and really learning, and that's a wonderful thing. You need to submit to your husbands, but you need to learn the Bible for yourself. And I want to tell you one blessing that brings. When Yvette is a good Bible student. She loves God. She's a good teacher. And I will tell you that has benefited so much in the raising of our own children. And I've told people all along, you know, every one of us are teachers, whether or not we ever teach a Bible class. If we've got children, we're teachers. Be the best teacher you can. Yes, you should submit to your husband, but that doesn't mean you let him do the Bible study. Husband could have no greater blessing than a wife who loves God. Well, I hope we've talked about some things to think about. I'll tell you, marry a Christian. Marry when it's time, when the time is right. I hope that your blessing will be like it was for Zacharias and Elizabeth. Here, God chose the parents of John the Baptist. What kind of parents did God choose for John the Baptist? In Luke 1:6 it says, and they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and the ordinances of the Lord blameless. Now, I'm going to give you a quick test for those who are already married and you listen to the lesson tonight. Just a quick test, be honest. Did you listen to the lesson hoping that your mate would get it? Boy, I hope he gets it. Yeah, that was good. Let me mention to you, that's not the way you ought to be listening. By the way, when you plan to get married, you better make the changes that need to be made before you marry. You don't marry and then try to make somebody over. I know some women sometimes, they want to be a mother to somebody and think they're going to make all these changes after they get married. No. Well, I tell you one thing you can't do. You cannot make your mate do anything. As a matter of fact, if you marry somebody to try to be their mother or daddy, that's not going to go well because they married you to be their wife or husband. I'm not saying you can't change a person through you doing right, but you can't make them over. You can't change another person against their will. The point of tonight's lesson for all of us in dating and in marriage is to be a better Christian. And if I'm married, that'll make me a better mate. And God will bless you beyond all the efforts you make. And I'm very thankful that He set the example in His own Son in dying for us and showing us how we're to live. As a man, the relationships, that was never something that I felt all of that comfortable in. You know, I'd rather go do something, accomplish something. Relationships are complex. But you become Christian. God's going to direct you to working with other people, whether or not you ever marry. Relationships are something we have to learn. It starts with a relationship with God. This evening you're not a Christian. We want to urge you to yield your life to the Lord. He died for you. He provided an avenue for you to be forgiven. As a penitent believer, would you be baptized into Christ as those on Pentecost did? And Christian, as we look at a lesson like this, I know we're challenged, but let's be challenged to be better. Better Christians. Faithful men and women, servants. And you know, by seeking last place rather than first place, God, you will bless you in ways that you'll never imagine. Can we help you in any way in responding to the gospel? The invitation is extended as we stand and sing.